All right, ladies and gentlemen, here we go again for another Tech Doctor podcast. This is Robert the Tech Doctor, and way out there in California is Allison Hartley. How's it going out there, Allison?
It is going fantastically. Anytime I get a chance to podcast is always a good day.
Ooh, that's a nice thing to say.
Well, I mean every word of it.
Well, this is going to be a fun podcast because we got a man on here who is telling us that he has 10,000 apps, 600 iBooks, 150 movies, 50 TV shows, and a few hundred audiobooks, all safely in the Apple universe. So you Tech Doctor listeners, just take a moment and try to guess who this man might be. Because he not only has all this and not only has made Apple this much a part of his life and his family's life, but he's also very willing to podcast about how to make the maximum use of all these Apple devices, tools, accessibility, etc. His name, of course, is David Woodbridge, all the way from Australia. And David, welcome to the Tech Doctor podcast once again. Thanks for being here. Take a minute and for those who don't know, tell us a little bit about what you do.
Sure, and thanks for having me on again. So basically, my job is my hobby, and I always like to say that my hobby is also my job.
You are a lucky man.
I look at every day and think, my God, isn't this a fantastic way to be? But basically, my job at Vision Australia is where I work, and I've just coming up for 25 years there now, is to do the Adaptive Technology Help Desk. And that's a range of all adaptive technologies, so not just Apple stuff, but you know, Android, Windows, Mac, digital televisions, all that sort of stuff that we come across in every single day of our life. Then I also evaluate upcoming products to see if they're suitable for people that use Vision Australia services. I run workshops for external and internal staff. I do a weekly Talking Tech radio program on Vision Australia Radio, on technology that might be of interest to blind or low vision people. I also am one of the key spokesmen on technology for Vision Australia, so that if a media company rings Vision Australia up and wants a quote about how technology may assist people who are blind, low vision, or have a print disability, I get called upon for that. And I also do my own podcast that I also share with work, and that's the IC Technology Podcast, and I try and sort of mainly do Apple stuff because that's my main interest, but I also cover other technologies as well. And of course, I Twitter quite a lot on reposting stuff on Twitter that I find of interest for both my radio program and my followers. So that's probably me in about a nutshell. And then, of course, as you mentioned, my whole house is well and truly definitely in the Apple universe.
Yeah, no doubt about it. But it sounds like before we really delve into the Apple universe, on your job, you, I guess, end up interfacing with all kinds of technologies because you're teaching people what they want to learn or what they can best use in their particular situation. Is that right?
We do. And we get lots of different questions from different people all over the place. And I'm still amazed even these days how either the community or people mislisten or misunderstand what technology can do and what it can do. So, for example, the main one that I still get lots of calls from are from retailers that ring up and say, yes, I've got a person who's blind in the shop here. Obviously, they need to use voice recognition to talk to the computer. Can you recommend the most appropriate voice recognition technology? And, of course, my response is, well, that's fine, but the main problem is the person then has to work out what's happening on the computer, not just speaking into it. And it doesn't occur to them because the assumption is, oh, well, the person's blind. They can't use the computer keyboard. They can't use a mouse. And when you turn around and say, well, there are things called screen readers that speak out information off the computer screen, and people can use the keyboard, they're quite amazed. So that one still comes up all the time. And, of course, the other famous one is people who are blind can't possibly use a touchscreen phone or tablet. It's absolutely impossible. And I've been trying to convince my person who is blind or low vision not to waste their money because, as we all know, they don't work. So I then have to talk to that person about Well, if you have a look in your Android or your, you know, your Apple iPhone or iPad or your Android tablet, if you go into settings and have a look at something called TalkBack or VoiceOver, you'll actually find it actually does work. Because what happens, of course, with some people is, and this is true for Windows and the Mac and Android and Apple, when they turn this stuff on and they start experimenting, if they've gone that far, what they find is they can't use the speech. And because they can't use the speech, they think their friend who's blind or low vision also can't use the speech or the screen magnification. So I need to do a lot of re-educating sometimes on the help desk to convince, you know, family and friends that blind or low vision people can actually use a computer or a phone or a tablet. So it gets quite interesting sometimes, even from people who are blind or low vision. And I guess it's been how they've been brought up, but they assume that they can't do things as well. And sometimes my background's actually a social worker, so I'll actually use a social working term. Occasionally I self-disclose that I'm actually blind myself, and I try and say, look, I know that my experience is not the same as your experience, but I found with some training initially that I could do these things as well. So it's not the fact that you can't do it, it's the fact that you haven't experienced it or you haven't had the appropriate person take you through those particular features or skill sets to be able to use the technology. And sometimes at the end of the day, I just say to people, look, if you don't like technology or you don't want a computer or you don't want a smartphone or a tablet, nobody's making you. So at the end of the day, if you don't want it, then don't worry about it.
So one of the things that I get from all that, and I really wonder what you both, Allison, you and David, would have to say about this. You know, it's so often that we hear people saying, especially about the Apple devices, it won't do this, it won't do that, won't work with the web, or it won't properly let me interact with my email or whatever. We hear all these things all the time, and I see them on mailing lists. And typically what I will do is go and try to replicate what the person is saying it won't do. And it's very rare. I mean, yes, there are bugs, and occasionally I find one, and we all find one, but most of the time it really isn't the case that the device won't do the thing they think it won't do. It's more often than not because they don't know enough about the nuances of interacting with something if it's on the Mac, or enough about how to make VoiceOver do the things that it's capable of in iOS. So I'm really curious, what do you all think about that? I mean, it just seems like it's a big problem we have in our community, and I wonder, you know, I'm really beginning to wonder what we can do about it.
Well, I think it's a problem that basically stems down to a lack of information, a lot of times maybe even a lack of training, a lack of confidence. Let's face it, we are a community that by and large is not very confident in ourselves. So we're not always going to be confident in the technology that we use. So when we hear, you know, from different other people that this technology, my iPhone won't work with email, my iPhone won't work with web, often what it takes is one of us who knows better that it does to sit down with a person and go step by step, whether that's in person, whether that's through a help desk, whether that's on an email list or Twitter, to say, okay, these are the steps that you need to follow to show them that, yes, actually this could work. And what I have found that happens, at least a lot of times, is when you go through those steps, then they're like, oh, okay, I get it. And they often are then maybe a little bit inspired to explore maybe a little bit more on their own sometimes. But I do agree that it is an issue. I think that it stems from, and I'm going to be controversial here, I think it stems from the idea of learned helplessness that is prevalent in our community. And I think that the misinformation and the problems with people thinking that the technology can do less than it actually can aren't really going to get solved until we as a community become more empowered to believe a little bit more in ourselves and our abilities. That's what I think.
What I find about this sort of stuff is when something doesn't work, it's almost like it's the end of the universe in general. And I guess me as a help desk person, if something doesn't work once, I'll try a few times to get it running, or I'll try another alternative. And sometimes that might be using a different application. But I just find the overwhelming attitude when something doesn't work, therefore it must be the end of the world, and therefore it must be the fact that Apple doesn't give an absolute damn about anything to do with accessibility, and we're on the slippery slope, on the downhill slide. And I had some calls end of last year, actually, about some specific applications on the Mac. Out of 12 applications this person was using, one wasn't working. So I ended up actually having to talk to the person about perspective, because I said, look, out of the 12 applications you're using, you're saying you've got one issue with one program, and you're turning around telling me that Mac is useless, Apple is useless, just because you can't use one particular program. So I think sometimes people have got to take a little bit of a step back and look at the whole situation on what they're using. I mean, here at home, yes, I have an issue with Safari. I guess I'm lucky in some ways because I've got 5 Macs in my house. I've left one of the Macs on a version of OS 10 that I know perfectly works with everything I need to do. And then, of course, I've got the latest Yosemite running on everything else. But I'm not going to turn around and say, well, Apple's lost it because I have to have one machine dedicated. That's actually my choice to dedicate that machine. I could always do something else and maybe only use that particular application at work, or I could try some different software to get over it. So, you know, I have exactly the same issues that everybody else has. I do have issues with iOS that sometimes it doesn't work, with OS 10, but I feed them back for the appropriate channels, and sometimes they don't get fixed, sometimes they do. For example, for a long time on the Apple TV, when you had a look at the AirPlay, it kept saying the name over and over again. So it would say lounge room, lounge room, lounge room, or toy room for the AirPlay speakers. Now, they actually fixed that, and it's perfectly fine now. You know, there's been an issue on OS 10 that the beta guys also fed back, and that got fixed. There are still some around the place as well. But I don't know, there's always this knee-jerk reaction to say just because something doesn't work, it follows that the people that can make it work don't care. And I really don't think that's a valid argument at all, really.
No, I don't either. And the other thing that I think has at least been true for me is that even with these bugs that you just described or bugs that I've experienced, none of them actually keep me from using my devices. And none of them keep me from still being satisfied that Apple is, for me at least, the most suitable platform out there. None of them make me think I need to switch to Android or Windows or go somewhere else. But I think so often people do really overreact, and I guess that's part of human nature. We can't stop people from overreacting, but I'm hoping we can at least begin to encourage people or educate people to, as you say, take a step back and really put it in perspective. And that's what really seems to be not working so well these days, in my opinion.
No, and look, I mean, honestly, when I look at, you know, one issue with one single program on my Mac, when I look at the fact that I can do so many other things with all of my Apple stuff in my house for my wife, for my, you know, my boys and my granddaughter, there is absolutely no way on this planet that I wouldn't even think about the, you know, of changing over to any other system, because this gives me 100% complete access and functionality for what I have to do as a dad, as a person who works, as a person who enjoys recreation, and as a granddad, that I can do all those things for Apple products. And just because one single thing doesn't work for me, I can't even imagine just giving that away because, you know, I don't think something works properly.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right, that we really do have so many things that we can do. And one of the things that I think is really great, that we can be a very good resource or very good tech support for even our sighted family members and friends who have Apple devices. I recently helped a woman and one of my colleagues at work get her iPhone backed up and change some settings and get some things done on it. And the fact that you can just triple click bring VoiceOver on, do what you need to do, and then turn it back off, give them the phone back, and they've got their iPhone just as it was before. But we can still have equal access to what we need to do to help them with it. I just don't know of any other mainstream platform that has made this kind of access that easily attainable. Do you?
I don't think so. I mean, when I think about all the things I could do with my Apple Gear, let's say, taking one example, my boys really enjoy listening to audiobooks. So at night time, what I do is with one of my Macs, I can AirPlay to the AirPlay speakers in their rooms the audiobook, and I can also monitor it on my Mac because I'm actually using AirFoil to do that. And that's so easy to do. And then the second example is if they want to watch something on the Apple TV and I need to read about it, then I can toggle again, like you can with the iPhone, I can toggle VoiceOver on and off and check the movie. I can rent it, I can buy it, turn VoiceOver off, and the boys can start listening to it. And where I find it comes in really handy with all this speech sort of stuff is my granddaughter, who's only 4 years old. When she wants to do something on her own iPad or when she wants to, again, access the Apple TV, because the thing's actually talking to her as well, then I can understand exactly what she's pointing at, because she's also saying, that just said so-and-so, Poppy, can I listen to that one? Or can you press the arrow twice so I can get to the one that I need to, and can you play it for me? So, you know, it's the fact that it's talking, but I can toggle it on and off again. You know, with the Mac, my wife had an issue with the Mac the other day, and I had to basically restart it and reinstall something. Last time I did that on a PC at home, which was probably about 3 or 4 years ago now, it was ridiculous. I had to actually end up getting a computer person to come in and fix it. But I just honestly find with the Mac that if there's actually any issues, if worst comes to the worst, I boot off a DVD that also talks, and either reinstall or fix the issue, and off I go again. So there's just so many examples time and time again where, because every single Apple product is accessible for us as blind people, I can do it myself. And to me, that's the most important thing.
Yeah, and when you do it yourself, you know, there's nothing like that feeling of independence. It's very important to me to feel like I'm an equal contributor to what's going on in my household with my family. And my wife, frankly, has no interest in being a technology person. She just wants it to work. We have an issue right now that I'm going to have to dig into where she is when she opens up a mail message, it comes up in a very small window. Also, when she replies, the windows are very small on the Mac. And I'm going to have to help her, I guess, resize those windows so that she can see them well enough. And it's so interesting that, you know, if you dig into it a little bit, you actually can work on these things, even the more visual aspects of the Mac. Takes a bit of understanding, I guess, really of how things work on the screen, and VoiceOver is pretty good about, you know, giving us that kind of information. Although, admittedly, I did need to do a little homework to figure that one out, because VoiceOver, even though the mail is in a small window on the screen, VoiceOver doesn't have a problem with it. So it raises some interesting issues like that.
It does. And look, I fall into that trap sometimes too. I even fall into the worst trap where you forget to turn screen curtain off. And then your sight of person that you're dealing with says, well, I can't see a damn thing on the screen because there's nothing on it. It's like, oh, yeah, screen curtain. I forgot about that one. But, you know, even that is another example of, I don't know of any other adaptive technology product on the market currently that gives you that level of also privacy. Because I can be reading a report on the train, I can be reading a report in a or meeting or some notes, or I can be doing stuff at home here, and I know that nobody can actually see what I'm doing on the screen because I've got screen curtain on the Mac and I've got screen curtain on my iPhone, on my iPad. So again, that level of privacy, particularly when you're reading perhaps a very confidential report that you know nobody is actually supposed to be able to see what you're reading, then to me that's also absolutely fantastic. So, you know, that's another example of where you almost feel like saying, well, show me another product that gives me this level of privacy, because I can't guarantee that I don't know that somebody's looking after my looking over my shoulder who is sighted. But I know if screen curtain's on, nobody can see what I'm doing, and therefore I maintain confidentiality and privacy.
Well, that's really a good point, and so interesting, because I don't think I ever myself even think about using screen curtain. But the beauty of all that is that Apple gives us that flexibility. If we need a particular feature, we can use it. If we don't need it, we don't have to worry about it. And people talk about only doing it Apple's way, but in reality, Apple's way provides more and more options and opportunities and flexibility that people don't even realize, I don't think.
No, and look, I strongly agree with that one, particularly about the different options. So, for example, we all know that the fact that when you navigate with VoiceOver, particularly on the Mac, you can use the keyboard, you can use the Magic Trackpad, or you can use the numpad on the, you know, the full size QWERTY keyboard, and so on. I had a chance to try and fix somebody's computer one day, and for some reason it wouldn't connect with their Bluetooth keyboard. But I actually had a Magic Trackpad, and I could get the machine fixed by just using the Magic Trackpad, because I could fully navigate what I needed to access. In this case, it was basically to delete and then repair the Bluetooth keyboard, and it worked beautifully. But I just like that, again, that flexibility, that nobody says you've got to use all the features and all the options, but if you know they're there, then you've got the flexibility. So sometimes at nighttime when I'm sitting back watching the television with my family, I don't want to use the keyboard because I might have a glass of wine in my hand, so I sit back and just use the trackpad, for example. So it's just another way of the technology fitting with your lifestyle rather than your lifestyle fitting with the technology.
In your podcast, you often demonstrate how to use different devices, and it seems like you are very creative when it comes to doing things that maybe people wouldn't necessarily think of, like you just mentioned, using that Magic Trackpad in a situation where you couldn't get the Bluetooth keyboard to work, or are using the Apple remote on the iPhone to control the Apple TV. But you've really figured out how to use gestures to make that all work well with VoiceOver. And I guess I'm just kind of curious, you know, how do you get there? How do you come up with a lot of these creative approaches that you introduced to us?
I think the main thing is, because I'm a help desk person, I always try and think of at least three or four different ways of doing things. This tends to be sort of automatically, I don't even think about it. But the reason why, for example, I did the Apple remote one was because I actually used, you know, the parental control to stop the boys accessing certain channels on the Apple TV. And of course, when you use the physical remote on the Apple TV, it actually reads out the numbers, of course, with VoiceOver. So it says 1, 2, 3, 4. Whereas if I use the Apple remote on my iPhone, it actually doesn't do that, because the actual the speech of VoiceOver is coming through my iPhone, and I just plug in my headphones. Because up until then, I thought, oh, well, you know, if I do it fairly fast or just up and down arrow through the numbers on the Apple TV screen, they're not going to know. And then, of course, my son, who's fortunately a very honest person, said, oh, Daddy, I know your PIN code's 4567. Can I use it now to play this to Right. Well, that shows you've got very good memory and you listen very well and you can remember things very well, but really probably mum and dad would probably appreciate that you didn't know our parental PIN number. So I said, what I'm going to do is, yes, you can use it now, but what I'm going to do is I'm going to change it in the future, because you really need to ask mum and dad that when you want to watch something, because we can make sure that's okay for you. So I changed it, and then I thought, maybe I better go and check what the remote app can do. So really, most of my podcasts that I do tend to come out of my own life experience. So when I come across something that I think, oh my goodness, I didn't realize you could do that, or I just found something that I can do with my family or a particular application, I tend to get fairly excited about it and want to share it with other people. So it's probably more something to do with my lifestyle, or that something's popped up at work and I've resolved at work, and then I share that. So, for example, the other day, and I don't know how I stumbled across this, but for a long time I just kept thinking, why is it with the trackpad on the MacBook or with the Magic Trackpad, you can't get to the status line? You know, to me, when you do a two-finger double tap at the top of the trackpad in VoiceOver, it takes you to the main menu. And I thought, well, this is just ridiculous. And for some reason the other day, I double tapped it, and then I went to touch the trackpad, and I went over to the right-hand side by accident, and I found that I had my notification center, my time, my Bluetooth. And when I took my finger off, it actually went straight into that particular menu, and I thought, oh, my goodness. And it's one of those times where you think, I can't believe I didn't know this before. And I emailed Apple because I got very excited about it, and I went, my goodness, guys, do you realize you can actually do this with the trackpad? And they went, yeah, that's been available for a couple of years.
but you just hadn't stumbled on it. I heard that podcast where you demoed that, and I wasn't aware of it either, you know, and went and tried it. And that is one of the interesting things about Apple that people don't realize is that a lot of times there is more accessibility there than what a lot of us even know about. And certainly we saw a book last year that really demonstrated how much more you can do with Pages and Numbers and Keynote and VoiceOver than people originally thought. And so I think that's so fascinating that, you know, we use these things all day long, all the time, and none of us knew that trick.
No, and look, they're the little things that, you know, when you stumble across them, they're absolutely fantastic. You know, it'd be nice to know if there was, you know, some sort of central repository. I know we've got Apple Viz and so on, but it's almost like I wish there was some sort of, I don't know, something through the Ethernet or, you know, some sort of Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy thing where if you wanted to know something and you needed to know that you knew it but you don't know it, then something would actually pop into your brain and say, oh, well, look, absolutely, you can do that, and this is the way you can do it. Unfortunately, you know, we can't cover every single different situation that people are in. So to me, I guess that's why I tend to podcast stuff that I come across, because I think, well, if I need it in my situation for my family, surely there must be other blind or low vision people that would also get usefulness out of it. And, you know, and that's why I tend to do it. And, you know, when I wrote an article and updated this year about how I use my Apple products. I mean, again, when I'm on the train, I sometimes don't want to get out my MacBook Air or my iPad or my, you know, my iPhone 6 Plus, because let's face it, they're expensive technologies.
But of course, you're carrying them all with you on the train, right? You have them all there.
I do. Which is actually very sad. You don't believe this. I've got a very large backpack.
I do believe it, because I have one also.
Me too.
That's it. But sometimes at night time when I'm coming back on the train, I don't feel comfortable about getting out this expensive technology. So sometimes I'll do two things. I'll either get out my Bluetooth keyboard and my Bluetooth headset and leave my Mac Air or my iPhone in my bag. So all people are seeing is just a computer keyboard and a headset. But sometimes I don't even want to do that. So in those situations, I just get out my iPod Nano or my Shuffle and just use them as a little MP3 player, and I could leave them clipped onto my belt or on my shirt pocket and just use them that way. So again, I've got that flexibility about saying, okay, at this point in time in my day, I don't feel comfortable with using my technology in public. So I'll actually hide the fact that I've got this expensive stuff in my bag, and I'll just use the little iPod Nano or Shuffle that most people probably have either forgotten what it is or are not really interested in because it's not, you know, it doesn't have a screen and that sort of stuff. And that's what I'll do. So again, I've got that flexibility depending on what I'm doing as to what technology I'm about to use.
I do worry just a bit sometimes about pulling the 6 Plus out in different places. I think we have to be careful with these devices.
Yeah, we definitely do. I take the train every day as part of my commute, and depending on which line you're running and what time of day it is, it can get a little rough at some of the stations. So I know for me, having the Aftershocks Blues is a really nice tool for me, because I can be doing whatever I need to do, walking around with my dog, but also, you know, stopping to wait for my second ride and listening to a book without ever having to have my phone out. And then if a phone call comes in, it's just really helpful to know that I have, you know, the same access to safety as other people. Because let's face it, we can be a target, and we can't always, you know, we could be a black belt in jiu-jitsu or what have you, but you can't always anticipate everything.
Exactly. And that's exactly why I tend to use my aftershocks as well, for the same reason. Or I also have a BEM speaker band that I use on my wrist if I'm using the Blind Square GPS app when I'm walking around the place. Then the other thing too is, I think people get a bit stuck on the fact that, you know, when we talk about Apple stuff, we're not just talking about Apple stuff in specific. We're talking about all the third-party stuff that you can also use with other products as well, not just Apple stuff. So, for example, we've got the BEM. I've got the BEM that I can use with an Android phone if I wish. I've also got the aftershocks that works with Android. But I've also got, and I know it's an Apple product, but you know, there are other examples around. I've got a Beats Studio wireless headset, and that, you know, I can answer and hang up phone calls on my iPhone. But if I plug in a 3.5mm cable to the headset, I can plug it into my good old, the thing I love to use all the time for reading Daisy books, is my Victor Stream, which has got nothing to do with Apple. And it's fantastic. So sometimes when, you know, we're traveling down to Sydney for a day trip, I just think, look, just for a change, I'll leave all my Apple gear at home or in my bag. I'll just get out my Victor Stream and I'll just read that way. So it's not the fact that I'm using Apple all the time. It's the fact that all the stuff third-party-wise that I'm using integrates with so many other things that I'm saving money at the end of the day and being flexible, because I know everything else integrates with everything else that I have to use.
So we've been discussing a bit on this podcast, kind of debating the merits of, if you need a secondary device, which I need a second and a third and a fourth and a fifth, it sounds like, and so do you. But if you need a secondary device, we've been debating whether, you know, it's preferred to get a Victor Stream, as you say, or maybe to get a second Apple device. And it sounds like you've done both. But I'm curious, are there things that you really prefer doing on the Stream as opposed to doing it on a touchscreen or an iOS device?
I guess my main thing is with, and why I got the Victor Stream and I still use it quite a lot, is the fact that you can turn it on, press a couple of buttons, and have your book start playing. Or if you left it where it was, you can just turn it on and off. And I think the fact that you don't have to worry about a touchscreen is probably one of the main issues. And what I mean by that is the fact that sometimes when I'm at the beach with my boys and I'm wet, I'm sweaty, I've got sand on me, there is no way in this planet I'm going to get out my iPhone and start using the touchscreen at the beach. Whereas I know if I'm reasonably okay with the Victor Stream, I can quite easily just get one finger, turn the power button on, just use the same finger and turn the play pause button on again, then I'm off and running. Whereas with the iPhone, I've got to unlock the screen, I've got to use the Touch ID, or I've got to, you know, use the app switcher to flick to the right application. It's just sometimes in those situations, it's just nice to have a device that, you know, it doesn't matter whether my fingers are sweaty or not, or if they're freezing cold and the touchscreen won't activate. Just having one device that will just operate with good old-fashioned button technology is just nice sometimes.
Yeah, it's a good point. And that's a situation like that, I would be much more comfortable probably taking a device like the Stream to the beach or on the beach than I would taking one of the touchscreen devices, because it is true that these devices, these Apple devices, are pretty expensive. And so we do have to be careful with them in that sense.
I recently just got a Stream mainly to have as that secondary device. I really don't feel, now that I have the iPhone 6 Plus, I really don't feel that it's worth the extra money of getting an iPad, either a mini or a full-size iPad, mainly because I just feel that I have a big enough screen as it is with the 6 Plus. So I got a Stream because it can do a lot of things fairly well. I like it for listening to NLS Bard books. I wish the downloads were a little bit faster, but, you know, such is life, I suppose. But yeah, I do like sort of having that secondary device where I can be listening to something on the Stream and interacting on Twitter on my iPhone. In those types of situations, I find that it really does help. I don't use it as often as I thought I would, but when I find myself needing that secondary device, it's good to know it's there.
One thing that I particularly like, and I guess this is coming, it's basically the Apple TV, but when I look at the Apple TV and what I can do with it, so for example, if I'm giving training to a bunch of people who are sighted on how you might, let's say, browse on the internet with speech, either on an iOS device or in iOS 10, it's extremely quick for me basically to mirror my screen, either on my iOS device or my Mac, to the Apple TV. So, and I know exactly what's being presented because I'm using exactly the same, you know, keyboard, screen, whatever else that everybody else is using. And I know it's working because if it wasn't working, it wouldn't talk. I remember when I first started doing my job back in the early 90s, I remember giving a presentation to a bunch of people for about 40 minutes until one of my colleagues walked in and said, "David, I'm really sorry to say this, but there's nothing on your computer screen." And nobody in the audience was willing to say, "Excuse me, David, when you're pointing out the fact that the screen's doing this, there's nothing for us to look at." So now with the Apple, I know that, you know, when it's being mirrored and it's talking, I know it's actually on the screen because if it wasn't working, there wouldn't be any voice or anything else coming through it. So, I mean, I know it's getting back to Apple devices again, but it's just the fact that I can control the experience, and for work, I can make absolutely sure that people are seeing what I need them to see is absolutely tremendous. And it's that feeling of independence and, of course, and being able to do it yourself as well.
Yeah, isn't it amazing, though, that people would sit there and not point out that you didn't have anything on your screen? I mean, I've done a couple of psychotherapy sessions where I'd forgotten to turn my light on. And it's the same thing. No one said anything until someone that knew me well came by and said, you know, what the hell are you doing with your light turned off? And so, I mean, it's just so interesting, you know, because, wow, I guess people are that uncomfortable.
Well, exactly. And look, there was another famous example that I always quote when I'm giving a workshop on Apple stuff. I used to live by myself, funnily enough, and I would forget to turn the lights on at nighttime. So, of course, when you ordered a pizza, the person would come to the front door and they would get absolutely freaked out that you were in this house with the lights turned off. And they used to get very funny and say, "Before you open the door, can you please turn your lights on?" Because they'd feel a bit funny about it. Whereas now, of course, we know with the light detector app on the iPhone, not that I live by myself anymore, but I can make sure that my lights are on. Or, for example, when I say to my boys, "Okay, the audiobook's finished, time to turn your lights off," and they say, "Yes, Dad, good night," I can say to them, especially my 10-year-old, "Gee, that's funny, mate. I've got a funny feeling you're still reading your book because as far as my iPhone's concerned, your light's still on." So it is really getting to the stage where it's actually quite handy. But again, it's just, you know, it's part of being in the sighted universe in general that we have to deal with. I mean, the other one that I use all the time, of course, is FaceTime. So, you know, if my wife's out and about and my boys aren't here and I've got to put stuff in the oven and I've got to have the oven at a certain temperature, I just use FaceTime. I just call my wife and say, "Can you just have a quick look at the dial on the oven? Make sure it's on 250 for me. The timer on the microwave sits at the right time." And it's fine. And it takes 2 minutes. Whereas before, I'd probably have to wait for them to come home, or I'd ring up on the telephone and saying, "Can you roughly tell me where you think the dial should be?"
Right.
Whereas now, I don't even think about it now. It's just, "Oh, yeah, I'll just FaceTime my wife, 2-minute conversation, point the camera at the microwave or the oven, bingo, it's all done." I don't even think about the fact now that I couldn't do this before.
Do you have thoughts about the Be My Eyes app that essentially does the same thing but lets you connect with a stranger to get similar information?
That's my issue with it, is the fact that it's a stranger. I guess because I've, besides being on the help desk, I was a caseworker for about 15 to 18 years with assessing people both at home, at school, university, and the workplace, and I'm very much into confidentiality and privacy. And to me, having somebody that you don't know look at what you're doing, where you are, what you're reading, what you're accessing, to me is personally a violation of my privacy. And when I was reading the terms and conditions about that particular app, there was nothing in there about how you would be able to protect yourself against people that might want to take advantage of you. So I decided not to actually use that app at all. I've installed it, and then I read the terms and conditions of the privacy, and then I immediately uninstalled it. And look, I know it's you know, you can restrict it to specific things that you want to do that don't let people know where your location is or anything else. But for me, it's just, I just can't get over the fact that I'm letting a complete stranger know about my life in general.
Well, it's really the same thing as asking someone you don't know on the street for help, saying, hey, excuse me, would you help me with this or that?
That's right, exactly.
What do you think about it, Allison? How do you feel about it?
I guess I have some of the same concerns. Like, this is somebody that I don't know who I'm essentially letting into my home, and I don't know who they are, where they've been, what their life circumstances are, if they're like a killer or what have you, but or if they're not a not nice person who would try to tell me the wrong thing to take advantage. I don't know. I probably will give it a try, but if I don't have a good feeling about the person right away, I will just end the call.
I'd say it'd be wise for people who do want to use it to be judicious about what things you use it for.
Absolutely.
Don't show people your bank account information. You know, or maybe don't show people too much on your camera about your home or whatever. So, I mean, because I do imagine that there are people out there who really can benefit from an app like this, but it certainly pays to be careful.
Yeah, you have to use your intuition. And if the person on the other end that you're talking to doesn't sound okay, then just, you know, you can connect with another volunteer.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, to me, I guess kind of from a Vision Australia point of view, when we get volunteers at Vision Australia to do volunteer work for our customers, they need to go through a child protection check, a police check, a skill check, and all sorts of other checks. Whereas I believe the way that this app particularly works is that if you want to be part of the whole community, you just sign up as a sighted person or as a blind person, and off you go. So there's absolutely no checks on that system at all. And again, you know, that's what concerns me. And I guess it would be very hard to do, almost impossible to do, I guess, worldwide. But, and you're right, Robert, I would just say to people, look, if you do want to use it, then just be cautious in what you do, and see how you go with it. And, you know, there's nothing that says you have to use it and nothing that says you don't have to use it.
Yeah, I saw on Twitter about something being misidentified for somebody. No, it was just lotions and shampoos and stuff, and there was no indication that it was done out of any kind of malice, but like there could have been a language barrier, it could have been any number of so there are problems inherent in that system as well.
One of my customers rang me up on the help desk one day, and they told me a very funny story about reading a barcode off some orange juice, and it was able to identify the fact that it was an orange juice and it was the correct barcode. The problem was somebody had actually changed what was actually in the bottle, and it wasn't orange juice. Luckily, in this case, it was bubble liquid for blowing bubbles. But they said they took a huge swig out of the bottle because they were... They kept saying, of course, every time I had a mouthful of water, it kept making the bubble liquid froth more. And they said it was the most absolutely disgusting experience I'd ever experienced.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah, and that stuff doesn't taste good either. Oh, boy. That is funny. And, you know, you just can't control for every variable. I mean, if somebody's going to change what's in the bottle, that's not much you can do about that. It is funny. It is interesting, though. I think that there is kind of a danger there. I mean, sure, if someone misread something, or anybody can make a mistake, or whether it was malicious or not, you don't want to get your, you know, be putting your eye drops in your ears or eardrops in your eyes, you know, because that's a dangerous thing to be messing with is our medications and lotions and shampoos and all that. So, I mean, it really is an interesting thing. I think it's really great that the guy had the idea to create this app and all, but I'm sure as the months go by, we're going to see, as with everything, what the pros and cons of it are. Well, you know, one of the things that has really come along with the current version of iOS, David, is this whole idea of family sharing. And we've seen, you know, some Apple podcasters really talk positively about how well it works or doesn't work, and we've seen other people, you know, say that they're not happy with it. Are you using family sharing with your family, and if so, what's your experience been?
My experience with family sharing has been absolutely fantastic. I absolutely love it. I've got an extended family, as in my daughter and my granddaughter up here on the Central Coast with me in a different house. But because she's a single mum, then I've got the ability to be able to share all our family stuff with her in particular. So like you said, I've got goodness knows how many applications, 150 movies, 50 TV shows, etc. So what's happened is I've got my boys signed up as under 18-year-olds, which stops them from buying things. I've got to confirm them first. My wife, of course, is another person on at the same level of accessibility that I've got on family sharing. And then, of course, I've got my daughter there, that so she can actually rent stuff or buy stuff as well. So really the only thing that I've got to remind her about is that when she buys an app herself and she doesn't put it on an iTunes gift card, then because I'm the primary person, I end up paying it for it on my MasterCard. But because our family talks all the time, that's not really an issue. And, you know, the fact that when my granddaughter comes over and she comes into the toy room here where my boys are, she can watch the Apple TV and she actually knows, and it's quite funny for a little four-year-old, she says, I want to watch the program on Nana's account, or I want to watch the movies on Poppy's account, or Mummy just bought this really good TV show about Mickey Mouse Clubhouse. Can I watch that today? So she's worked out somehow that she knows with the Apple TV, which she calls the little box, that the box at her place and the box at my place somehow give her the same access to the movies and the TV shows. So it's quite funny sometimes. And she'll even go and get the Apple remote out of the remote stand on my entertainment unit and hand it to me and say, time for box watching, please. And off she goes. So you know, she's worked it out really well. And, of course, my daughter loves it because she's now got access to all the apps that I've already purchased.
So well, not only that, but she's got Dad's MasterCard.
That's right. She has indeed. Yeah, I must say we've been using it now from, I think, just before Christmas, so probably halfway through December. I think she's only bought two or three things that I've had to remind her that, look, you know, it's great you're buying this stuff, and, yes, we can use them for her daughter as well. But, you know, I've just got to remind her that the fact that my MasterCard is being held ransom to her purchases. But, you know, besides, I mean, three purchases, which probably totals about $18, you know, out of the 10,000 apps and 150 movies and 40, you know, 50 TV shows and so on, it's not really that big a deal. In fact, I made a bit of a boo-boo last year. I saw the fact that I think the James Bond box series was available. And I don't know why, but for some odd reason, I thought I heard it say $12.90, which is absolutely ridiculous. What it really was $129.00. And I thought, gee, this is a good deal. 23 movies for $12. They must be doing some sort of, you know, promotion thing. So I bought it. And my wife, my daughter brings me up the next day and said, Dad, I just had a look at all the TV shows you've got on your Apple ID on family sharing. Do you know you've got 23 movies of James Bond, and it was actually $129? I said, well, just keep that to yourself, and when my wife finds out about it, I'll try and find some way of explaining it to her.
Yeah, I think sometimes we were able to get VoiceOver to say what we want it, what we want to hear, not necessarily what it actually says.
That's right, and look, that was what I said to my wife when she did find out. I said, I could have sworn it said $12.90, not $129.00.
Exactly.
Unfortunately, she knows the trick, so that didn't work at all.
So, yeah, my husband's a voiceover user too, so he'd be like, yeah, right, okay.
yeah. So technically, you've had no problems with the sharing, with people being able to access their own stuff, or it's all worked out well for you from a technical point of view also, it sounds like.
Oh, look, absolutely. And the fact that I use iTunes gift cards, so, you know, sometimes from families and friends I get iTunes gift cards, and what I tend to do is I put the movies that probably are more for Ellen, myself, my daughter to watch on my Apple ID. And then my wife's Apple ID is more for, if you like, family time viewing. So it's all the children's type movies. And what makes it so easier for me is that when I get an iTunes gift card in the mail, I can just pull the little plastic tag off, put it in front of my iPhone camera or my Mac's eyesight camera, and hey presto, it's actually read the barcode, put it straight into the app, and I've got that amount of money on my Apple ID. So for example, I mentioned the fact that my daughter starts to use my credit card sometimes. I've actually ended up giving her a few iTunes gift cards for Christmas last year to hopefully compensate for that. But again, it's the fact that, you know, iTunes gift cards are so easy to use and put in that you don't have to have a sighted person reading it to you or anything else. You can just hold it in front of the camera and it imports it straight in. So, you know, for me, family sharing it's just been absolutely brilliant. I mean, it's the best thing that I've found to do with Apple and one of its features. And the other thing I like about the family sharing is that for both reminders and calendars, you can also do with family sharing. So my daughter's a nurse and she has to do night shift every now and again. So she puts in the times in family sharing when she needs us to look after her daughter for her. And it's just so easy. She doesn't have to ring us up and say, "Hi guys, are you okay for next Sunday or in 2 weeks' time I've got to do a night shift?" She just pops into family sharing and then we have a look at it, checking our diary. And if we can't make it, that's fine. If we can do it, that's also perfectly fine. And sort of, I guess, not quite to do a family sharing, but Find My Friends, for example. Again, I use that all the time because sometimes my wife has to go and be a bit delayed about picking my boys up from karate or from swimming or from gymnastics, or she has to go and pick up my granddaughter. And if she's running late, all she'll say to me is, just check me on My Friends and you can tell where I am and I'll probably be there depending on where I am in about 10 or 15 minutes. So again, it's no more ringing up people and saying, "Well, where are you?" or "You said you'd be here 15 minutes ago." I can just, you know, launch Find My Friends and say, "Oh yeah, look, she's 10 kilometers away. She'll be about 25 minutes. So again, it's that almost that thing about just knowing where people are makes it much more comfortable and you don't get as frustrated or irritated because, you know, people haven't turned up or you think they've got lost or they've forgotten about you. It's just the fact that you can just quickly look in there and say, "Oh yeah, that's fine." And you don't have to keep pestering them basically.
And all these things that you've mentioned are perfectly accessible with VoiceOver.
Yes. The only thing I don't like, the fact that I find with Find My Friends is I can't see specifically on the street where the person is. So, you know, it might say, you know, Ellen's in Hornsby, but I can't tell where in Hornsby she is. But for me, I don't need to know the exact street stroke address that a sighted person could probably check. To me, it's enough to know that she's in a suburb and I know how far that suburb is away, and that's absolutely fine. So, you know, for me, that's the only thing that's probably, you know, technically not accessible.
Right, it's the map. The map isn't accessible.
Yes, correct.
It's the street map. But the information about where she is that is text-based, obviously, is accessible.
Yes, correct. That's right.
Yeah, and so, I mean, you know, these are all things that come with your Apple devices. I mean, I guess we've made a pretty good case in a sense for living within the Apple ecosystem because you just described several things that you do that you and your family can benefit from. And I suspect that many people are not aware, for example, that you can set up a calendar sharing, you know, among people, or reminder sharing, where you can set up a grocery list, for example, and each person who needs to can add something to the list and everybody can see that. But I'm not sure people are really aware that you can do all that.
I don't think so either. I mean, one of the final things that I just mentioned, because again, it's my absolute favorite thing that I do. Sometimes my boys misplace their iPad or their iPhone or their iPod Touch and they can't find it because sometimes they get a bit messy. And just using Find My iPhone to make the device actually play a tone is absolutely fantastic because half the time it's under the couch in the toy room or it's in the boot of the car or it's under their bed or it's in their cupboard or it's in their school bag. And just the simple fact to be able to log in with your Apple ID and say, "Oh, yep, there's Lachlan's iPad or there's Owen's iPad," and just make it ring is fantastic. I don't have to start, you know, yelling at the boys saying, "Look, Dad's told you that you've got to keep track of this stuff. It's very expensive. Where have you put it this time? Have a look. You're not doing anything else until you find it. Blah, blah, blah. I can just say, fine, no problem. I'll get the iPhone out and we'll find out where it is. And even now, particularly my older son who's 10, he actually knows about Find My iPhone. So when he can't find it, he'll say, Dad, can I buy your iPhone so I can use Find My Friends to find out where I put my iPad in my bedroom? But, you know, it works extremely well. And again, it's just built in. Everybody uses it. And to me, it's just no big deal. But when I haven't got it or haven't got access to it, I think, geez, this is one of these times I wish I had my Apple stuff on me because I know I could do something.
Yeah, and so really, you know, that's making a great case, I think, for what these Apple products can do. And that's what I was hoping we could talk some about. I know that, you know, we all three ended up with the iPhone 6 Plus. How are you feeling about the bigger phone as opposed to maybe the iPhone 6?
Look, I don't even notice it these days. It's just a bigger phone. It definitely fits in my jeans pocket. It fits in my other pants pocket. It's never fallen out. I've got a good sturdy case for it. But I guess one of the reasons why I bought it is for a couple of reasons. Number one is because I've got, again, my little granddaughter. I know that when we're at lunchtime, sometimes she's getting a bit bored. I know my phone's big enough screen-wise to let her watch her favorite movie that she might want to watch. But secondly, because of the Braille screen input mode now in iOS 8, if I need to dash off a quick email or tweet or something that I'm out and about, I know I can just get my iPhone out, put it in a landscape on the table, bring up the Braille screen input keyboard and start brailing. I don't have to use voice dictation or the on-screen keyboard or get out my Bluetooth keyboard or anything else. I can just do it in landscape mode on the larger iPhone 6 Plus screen. I did go to an Apple store and have a look at the 6, and I thought, well, if I want to make sure that I can really use the Braille screen input, the more real estate I've got to play with, the better I like it. And it's just a nice, comfortable, if you like, Perkins-style finger position to just have your six fingers on there and your two thumbs resting on the side of the phone, and you can just browse to your heart's content. So, you know, to me, the 6 Plus is absolutely fantastic. My wife's got a 6 Plus as well. I got a 128 gig one, and I tried to convince my wife that she didn't need as much size as I did. But, of course, she ended up also getting a 128 gig iPhone 6 Plus as well.
Exactly. She knows your tricks by now.
That's right.
Yeah, that's what Jeremy and I both have too, the 128 gig 6 Plus. And for us, especially for me, for my long commute, I love that battery life. I can get easily, and I use the heck out of my iPhone during the day for pretty much everything. And even still, I can easily get 24 hours out of it.
Yeah, I love the battery life too. And I like the size. It fits fine in all my pockets, just as you said, David. And I too use that Braille screen input a whole lot. I find that it works really well for me. There's a new app made by the person who did Voice Dream Reader called Voice Dream Writer. And it works really well. It's a word processing app that syncs with iCloud, and it works really well with Braille screen input also. And so it's given people a very nice way to write on the iPhone, and it has some nice features like the ability to use some specialized commands for selecting text and moving sections of text around easily in an article. It also uses Markdown as its language so that you can add bolding and italics and other formatting characteristics and easily know what those are right in the document. So if people don't know about VoiceDream Writer, you might want to check it out if you're interested in doing some writing on these devices. It works really well, actually.
Yeah, and look, the other interesting thing too that I tend to use, and I keep forgetting it's not available on the PC, which leaves me high and dry sometimes, is when you, and this is back to the Mac, when you type on a Mac, no matter what application you're in, you're constantly being spell checked. So you know when you mistype something. And for some people, you can quite easily hit escape on a partially typed in word and get word suggestions. But the main thing that I sometimes use word suggestions for, or I tend to use voice dictation for, and this is both on the iPhone and on the Mac, is sometimes I'm doing a shopping list and I've forgotten how to spell a word. And rather than having the fact that my wife is going to start laughing at me because I can't spell product names properly. I tend to cheat and either use word suggestion or I use voice dictation to actually make it put in the word. So, for example, my main fame to shame is I can't remember how to spell yogurt, whereas voice dictation or word prediction is perfectly fine spelling yogurt. So my wife commented about 3 months ago. She said, you know, I haven't actually had to laugh at any of your shopping lists for the last 3 months. What system are you using to get around this issue? And I went, nothing. I've just improved my spelling.
yeah. It's a great point, though. I think that blind people, because we don't see all the advertisements and the stuff, the labels on stuff in the stores, there are a lot of, especially shopping items, food items, that I don't know how to spell correctly. And so it's a real issue. I mean, it's great to have that spell checking capability. I mean, my gosh, you know, that makes you able to make a shopping list that's equally as precise as anybody else.
That's right. Although I remember back in the old days, particularly with the old Echo 2 synthesizer on the Apple IIe, I didn't realize for a long time until somebody told me that when it said unclone error, it actually was saying unknown error.
Uh-huh.
And the other one it used to do is it could never say the word psychiatric properly. It always used to say psychiatric.
Yep.
So I just, you know, that was just absolutely clearly, you know, two classic words. And I find sometimes, particularly when I'm using either Alex or in Australia here, the Karen voice on the Mac, sometimes Karen won't pronounce the word used as in U-S-E-D or U-S-E as in used properly. So what I do in that case, I just think, oh, well, I'm pretty sure that word's right. So I'll just change language synthesizers between, you know, maybe Karen, Alex, or in one of the other voices such as Dan or UK, and just double check the word that way as well.
Yeah. And again, it's about having that flexibility. I'm sure one of the things that we've been able to use here in the U.S., and I actually have not used it yet, but I hear so much about it, I'm going to as soon as I have the chance, is Apple Pay. I hope that's going to be coming to you all this year, and I think that's going to be a great assistance to people who are blind and safely being able to pay for stuff.
Exactly. I mean, I still don't like going into the shop. You know, sometimes you don't forget to put your bills in the right order, or you don't have the money identifier app running on your iPhone, for example. And, you know, say to a person, oh, can I just check if this is a 20 or a 50? It's just leaving yourself open sometimes to get taken advantage of. Mm-hmm. But the other thing that just popped into my mind when you mentioned Apple Pay, Robert, is the fact that with the new device coming out hopefully in April, which is the Apple Watch, I don't know of any other company, and we don't know, but we're speculating that we're 90% sure that it will be accessible. But when I asked a question on Twitter a couple of months ago, does anybody know whether any other wearable smart type watch is accessible? The responses back I got were no. And the fact that, you know, hopefully it will be accessible is the fact that it's more likely to have higher hopes that Apple does make it accessible than any other company making their mainstream smart device accessible, that, you know, for a wearable device or not.
Yeah, I'm really confident that it will be accessible, and that's going to be exciting. Allison, have you used Apple Pay?
I have used Apple Pay. I used it at a Radio Shack when I was buying a cable a couple of weeks ago, and it was fast. It was really fast. You just put your finger on the Touch ID. You put the phone near the NFC reader. It beeped at you. It let you know, which card you were going to be using. And then you just leave your finger on the phone, keep your phone near the NFC reader, and it makes a little beep and it says done. And it was that fast. And I didn't have to divulge any of my information to anyone. It just worked exactly it was supposed to. And we've gotten confirmation. I can't remember if it was Lifehacker or 9to5Mac. One of those websites did mention that there is going to be accessibility built into the Apple Watch. Certainly VoiceOver and Zoom, I have heard confirmed.
I turned, God help me, 49+2 couple of weeks ago. And I said to my wife, you don't have to buy me anything because I'm going to get the Apple Watch in April. So that's going to be my late birthday present, and I'm certainly going to do a range of podcasts on the Apple Watch when it appears.
Oh, fantastic.
I'm sure we'll all get it, and we'll all be looking forward to your podcast. I always enjoy hearing your reviews when the new operating systems and new devices come out, and personally, I very much appreciate all that work that you do, because you do such a good job with it.
You really do.
Well, I guess we better begin to wind this up here. We're getting some breakup in Skype, and it sounds like the Skype gods are tired of us doing this, maybe. David, is there any thing you'd like to leave Tech Doctor listeners with as far as parting information, contact information, or just anything else about your podcast or how they can get it or anything at all?
Look, I would just say, if you want to get to my podcast, the easiest way in iTunes is to put in David Woodbridge. And when you search in iTunes, you'll get two things that come up. You'll get my IC podcast that you can subscribe to, and you'll also get my IC book that I've got to update on iTunes because it's a little bit out of date now. It was done the year before last, but it's a free book, and it goes through most of the Apple accessibility products, the third-party stuff that I've mentioned today, some resource links and some other good stuff, you know, both covering iOS and the Mac and the Apple TV and so on. If you want to follow me on Twitter, that's pretty easy. It's just at D Woodbridge, and that's D Woodbridge, WOODBRIDGE, at D Woodbridge. And if you want to give me any feedback or suggestions for podcasts, that's probably the best way to, you know, give me some information or give me future ideas for future podcasts. But I think in getting back to Apple in general, I just think it's always important to realize that at the other end of that email or the phone or anything else, there actually are human beings trying their best. And it may not always seem that they are doing their best, but the Apple accessibility team has to be across so many products, hardware and software at Apple, that they can't solve everything all at once. I have a particular bug that, now, while it's not a showstopper in iTunes, I just find it's always there when I come across it, and it just reminds me that it hasn't been updated yet. But, you know, every couple of so months I'll email Apple and say, hi, guys, I just noticed that this thing hasn't been updated yet. Can you give me some time frame when it might be updated and so on? So I just think the bottom line is to be courteous, to give positive feedback and constructive feedback. And if one thing, you know, doesn't work for you, that doesn't mean really it's the end of the universe. Keep feeding back, and, you know, hopefully it'll be fixed. And every day, if it's not fixed, sometimes I find if it's not fixed, I'll just go use some other way of doing something, and I end up with exactly the same result.
Well said, and I couldn't agree more. And thank you very much for taking some time on what is an early Monday morning for you and a Sunday evening for us here in the U.S. Thanks for coming on the podcast, and we sure enjoyed having you here to spend some time with us.
Yes, thank you, David.
Yeah, my pleasure.
All right, well, we'll do it again sometime soon, because we're going to have Apple Watch and many more things to talk about this year.
So much more to come.
All right, everybody, thank you so much for listening this time. And Allison, if you don't mind, maybe you can tell them how they can get in touch with us via email.
Well, I don't mind at all. We'd love to hear from our listeners, so please do feel free to send us an email to techdoctor@dr-carter.com. That's techdoctor@dr-carter.com.
All right, you all, thanks again for listening, and until next time, this is Robert the Tech Doctor saying so long for now.
And this is Allison Hartley saying bye, everyone.
And I probably should say, when I do my podcast, I always say, as always, thanks for listening, and bye for now.
My dog even enjoyed it. He came right over.